Excellent. Okay, so I'd like to thank you and thank the organizers for inviting me to speak or selecting the abstract for this talk. So as Walter said, I'm a physicist by background, so it may be amazing to you or surprising to you that I could come and speak about grids and the influenza, but really, as a physicist, my culture has been to handle large volumes of data, to analyze large volumes of data, and that's why about 8 years ago I started a research group dedicated to using the expertise or the culture of the high energy physics to solving problems outside of this field. And of course, at that time, the grid technology was appearing, and then it was a very natural environment. Grids were very natural environments to develop these line of thinking and these new strategies for data analysis. So the outline of my talk is the following. I will first give you some generalities about grids and tell you about the current state of thinking in the area of grids applied to health and particularly to public health. Then I will outline some critical success factors before going into the specific use case on which I'm working right now and I'm developing, which is about offering services to monitor an emerging disease and the current influenza A epidemics being the current example. So without further waste of time, let me introduce grids. So grids are not something really new or different in terms of technology. It's mainstream of the development of internet. And as you know, the internet has been invented in the last century and about 20, 25 years ago. And then World Wide Web was really the environment on which the internet technology could be used and widely adopted by users. And clearly, the high energy physics community was involved in this, in taking this technology and making it available to a community of users. And if you follow on the slide, then we are now into the era of web services and which are standards-based computer-to-computer interactions across a network using some now well-accepted universal standards, and into the era where the web is used as a platform for exchanging informations. And clearly, into this global evolution, grid services appear as internet-based distributed computing services. So these are computer resource intensive web services, because grid and web services, these are really now converging into the same technology. And it's a further step toward what we could see as Web 3.0, which is internet as a virtual computer with access to an ecosystem of web services that include high performance computing services based on the grid technology. So the grid technology itself, when we speak of a grid, it means it's a network of computers which are handled by a middleware. So a grid is an open source based middleware platform. And when you speak of grid, you speak of security. It should be and it must be a secure ecosystem, providing services, computing, data services. As I said already, with the World Wide Web, the particle physics research community is playing a leading role, not in the invention of the technology, but clearly in its widespread deployment and possibly its wide adoption. So Globus is clearly a predominant technical platform. As a European, I'm really using grid infrastructures using G-Lite, but there are also there's another middleware in Europe called Unicore, with more specifically designed to access supercomputers. As I said, grid technology standards and web services are very much converging, and we could speak of only web services now allowing distributed computing. And I've been really, if you look at now at the specific area of health, for about 5 years now in Europe, there's been an important effort to identify the major challenges to the adoption of this grid technology in healthcare. And some documents are available now on the web on how what we identify as the important steps towards this wide-scale adoption. So if we look into the grid itself, and there is a general definition provided by Jan Foster, which is a grid is a system coordinating resources which are not subject to centralized control using standard open general purpose protocols and interfaces. And a grid architecture is a distributed computing infrastructure coordinating resources using this standard open protocols and interfaces and providing a quality of service in a coordinated fashion. So you may know that really the standards for building grids are discussed in a forum called Open Grid Forum, and they have defined a general architecture for the grid called Open Grid Services Architecture, which addresses the different computing services, data services, and knowledge management services. And if we still use this looking at the definition, a health grid is a grid infrastructure applied to health and biomedical informatics. So in this field of applying grids to health, there have been a number of initiatives, and the first dedicated initiative to applying grids for healthcare is the EU Health Grid Association, which really was founded 5 years ago and focused on application of grid technologies to life science and health from molecular to population level data. So you can, if you're interested, you can look at the websites. And there is now a sister initiative which was born 3 years ago, which is the Health Grid US Alliance, which has about the same goal, which is working in close collaboration with the European Health Grid Association. Speaking of important initiatives, there are two very big infrastructures in Europe, DEISA, which is a network of supercomputers, and EG. So EG, I'm working on EG, it's a computing infrastructure for it's now 10,000 researchers worldwide. It's more than 100,000 computers which are now federated or shared into this huge grid, what we call in Europe e-infrastructure. So clearly, other very important initiatives, especially here in the United States, are the CDC Public Health Grid initiative, the PH Grid, which is a research and development activity currently ongoing. And I think you had opportunities to hear about that during this conference. And also, there is a very important step forward, an international public health grid, which is a WHO-CDC, WHO-CDC Collaborating Center, which goal is to foster a global partnership for public health informatics. And also, which aims at enlisting a large international participation, promoting global information exchange, developing sharing tools and best practices. So this slide gives you the vision. What do we want to do? What do we mean by a global grid? A global grid is really an architecture federating resources, all the resources, all the actors involved in public health at an international level. So you have countries, you have public health ministries, you have data providers, you have data consumers, you have all the international or national organizations, you have all the resources. And the goal is to define protocols, to provide interoperability, to provide resources, computing and storage resources to enable the exchange of information, the circulation of information, the launching of alerts at an international level to improve the public health at a world level. Clearly, this big picture is a huge challenge, and enabling such a picture requires governance, requires technological choices, and you have here an example of what could be a public health grid service ecosystem at a national level in the United States, where you see a number of services developed, made available to a number of actors of public health, and where you can see that anytime a new service has to be developed, there must be some kind of a governance system that allow to go through different steps to make this, to develop this system, this service, and make it available to the relevant stakeholders. Here you have an example of the orchestration of services you can imagine or you can think of on such a public health grid. What you have here, you wish to monitor the evolution of the mortality rate and produce a number of graphics, and you access services, a service library providing a number of databases, and you can choose. So you have first the data services providing the data, the analytical services where you can choose. Where you can choose what you want, how you want to treat the data, and then the representation of the analysis result in terms of reporting services. So that's clearly what we are aiming at, what we want to enable, the picture we want to enable. To achieve that, there are a number of critical success factors. So a first critical success factor is the service-oriented architecture. Why? Because you need to enable this picture, you need to involve a number of people. So you need to have a collaborative work. So the advantage of the service-oriented architecture is clearly agility, synergy, and also the capacity to enable privacy and confidentiality. The challenge, of course, is to get people to work together. So the most difficult is not the technology, but really to get people to work together and to share. As well, the other important aspect is enterprise architecture, because enterprise architecture is a process which is vital to enable to develop complex and distributed systems. So you have the different steps of this process. So let me also share the importance of collaborative development and governance, as I said already. So collaborative development, because there's so much to do that separately it's impossible to get to this global vision, these visions that I showed you. And governance, because it takes agreeing on standards, agreeing on interfaces, on controlled vocabularies, on strategic priorities. So a good example of such a project or a good way to go is the CABIC project. So without further generalities, let me go now to the use case on which we are working. So the world is faced with a major pandemic, H1N1, you all know about, of course. And the question is, from this theory to the day-to-day, daily life, is there a way to improve the response to emerging diseases using grids, not in the future, but today? are grids able today to offer services which are not offered by other other services, by other infrastructures? Clearly, it's important to realize that these epidemics, as far as I understand, is really the first where data are shared at an international level in a public way. And really, every day, it's possible to download the sequences of many, many patients which have been diagnosed with the H1N1 virus and for which there's been a sequencing of the genome. So we are really in a new generation. Before, it was not possible because sequencing was so expensive. And today, there are all the elements to really monitor and to provide to epidemiologists the answer to the question, where does the virus come from? How does this virus spread? How does the virus evolve? These are important questions for epidemiology. And the only way to really track down the virus history is through its imprint on the viral genome. And what is very interesting is, as I said, we have now many, many sequences made available on public databases like NCBI. And if you look at the way the database of influenza sequences evolve at NCBI, there are daily uploads. So whenever sequences a virus is sequenced, it's added to the NCBI. But the issue is the data are in NCBI, and what would be wonderful is to have the possibility to have an analysis of this data done every day so that there is a constant monitoring on a daily basis on the way the virus is evolving. And this requires to have, I would say, the capacity to collect the data, to analyze them, and to produce the results on the fly dynamically. And that's what we are doing now. So what we are doing and what is shown on these slides, we regularly, daily, upload from NCBI all the new data and we add it to a grid database. So we add metadata, we collect metadata, we collect the sequences, and we collect the needed identification numbers. And what we do is it's shown on this picture. So daily we download from NCBI, we put the new NCBI data into a grid database. And once the data are in this grid database, we can do anything, any treatment with it. And we are able to require or to access all the necessary computing resources for our analysis workflows. And the added value of the grid here is the following, is that we can allow epidemiologists every day to have a daily updated view of the virus evolution from the genome data. So in a sense, it's not really, there is the added value is really hidden. It's really, we are able to collect the data, to process them using as many computers as needed, and to daily make them available wherever or to whom is interested. And what is interesting with the technology, thank you. What is interesting with the grid technology is that this picture that I show you for NCBI, we could do it exactly the same, not with one database, but with three, with as many databases as needed. Because it's easy, what we are doing with NCBI, we could do it with a database in China, a database in any country willing to share, to accept that we query it to extract some of the relevant information. And this global picture is now operational and will be demonstrated in 2 weeks from now. We will demonstrate to a conference in Europe. We run a first analysis, which is to generate the phylogenetic tree of evolution of the virus on the fly, daily, day after day, from the NCBI data. And this kind of application is just it's a demonstration of what the grid can bring. And clearly, now what is needed is to understand from the epidemiologist what would be the information relevant for them to get every morning when they take their coffee. What would you like to see on your screen from these genomics data? Because clearly, here what we have enabled today is using the sequences, the virus sequences. So in conclusion, I would say that grids are operational now. The services can be made available for epidemiologists. We need to understand from the EPIs what they need and how to make the info available to them. What is useful? And clearly also this example, this use case that I show you, is just a first step toward a much more ambitious vision to which we are working in collaboration, and there is an international collaboration working. And we'll have meetings at the end of the week at CDC with WHO representatives, but there is a global work toward implementing this vision. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Any questions for Vincent? Yes.
Number one. Number two, when in your bringing on other computers onto the grid, what kind of lessons learned have you acquired during the process of other computers joining the network?
Okay. Can you repeat?
Yeah, I'll repeat the questions. I'm sorry. Mm-hmm. So normally in grid computing, you're distributing workloads to other ownership domains on the grid. The scenario that I thought I heard, I may have misunderstood it, was that you're extracting data from some other computer to be brought back to be processed on your own machine.
Yes.
So have you gotten to the point of actually distributing work to available computers that are owned by another ownership domain? And then the second question was, as you brought other computers onto the network who were trying to use those web services, what kind of lessons learned have you experienced?
So to answer the first question, we are definitely uploading or dynamically extracting data from computers. We are storing them on grid databases which can be queried in a secured way by the whole community, and we run workflow analysis of this data, and we distribute the jobs for this data analysis on a different ownership domain. So we do all of that, okay? So, and it's fully secured. And that's something which we have been able to do now for about 2 years. So it's just been recently that we've been able to do all that. Now, about the lessons learned from adding resources to the grid, the lesson is that it's really it requires still a lot of manpower to operate grid resources in a reliable way. It means it's easy to have additional resources added to a grid to a production grid, but the challenge is to have them really available with a good efficiency. Or the main problem with the grid is stability, and what we find out is that it's better to have less resources but better maintained than to have too many resources but which break all the time, because then you lose in efficiency. Does it answer your questions?
Yes, it did.
Okay.
Any other questions for me? Okay, thank you very much, Vincent.
You're welcome.
Wonderful.